Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fugitive by K.E. Osborne. Narrated by Tortom and Tatiana Sokolov. Prologue. Kevlar. It's funny the way life works out. You meet the woman of your dreams, and you fall madly, deeply, irrevocably in love, despite the odds. She was the lone daughter of a biker. His princess. Me? I was the young cop working on patrol when I came across the club. She was untouchable. I was untrustworthy in their eyes. For us to be together was frowned upon not only by the force but by the club. Though somehow, we made it work. Dating for a couple of years before her father finally declared I couldn't be a cop and be involved with a member of the club. I had to choose. The force or Emma. There was no choice. We were married a year later. 1 year after that, Sadie was born. Soon after, I was officially patched in. It was inevitable. The moment I laid eyes on Emma, I was done for. Even though in the eyes of my captain father and my lieutenant brother, I was a failure to the long line of Rudd family policemen. I was an outcast. I'd brought shame to the name, but I didn't care. I had my own family, and that was all that mattered. We were happy. Fuck, we were happy. I had no clue someone like me, a man who always obeyed the rules and was brought up in a strict family environment, could learn to be an outlaw and love the life. Fox and Bub showed me even though converting from a cop to a one percenter was seen as rebellious, it didn't mean I'm not still a decent human being, a great husband, and a fucking amazing father to our kids. Yeah, it's funny the way life works out because I never saw it coming. My life in the club was set. Emma and I would grow old together, raising Sadie and Lucas. Emma's parents, Fox and Bub, were along for the ride, and the entire club backed us and our decision to be together as a family. Until the news broke. I thought I had more time. Hell, I thought I had a fucking lifetime. My fingers gripped tighter onto Emma's bony hand as she laid in the hospital bed. Her usual gorgeous chocolate-colored eyes were closed as she rested her weary, weathered body. When I met Emma, she was this stunning, vivacious woman, so full of life, such a gentle soul. Now I couldn't even be sure her soul was still inside her. Bub softly wept as she clung to Fox on the other side of the bed. Our kids weren't there. My brother, Ethan, had them. They shouldn't have to witness their mom like this. I wanted their memories filled with their mother smiling at them, telling them how much she loved them. Not this. Not this shell. Emma's still the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen, but she had faded away so much she was hard to recognize. My stomach churned with every slow gasp her throat inhaled, and I knew it was only a matter of time. I leaned closer, pressing my lips against her arm, her pale skin already chilly. It made me fucking sick to my stomach. It's okay, Em. We're here with you. We're not going anywhere. Fox set forward, placing his hand on the blanket over her shin. That's right, baby girl. We'll be here the entire time, all three of us. In fact, the whole club is here, out in the waiting room. We all love you, Em, Bub added, sniffling while wiping her face again. I shifted my chair a little closer. If you're holding on for us, don't. As much as I never want to let you go... My throat clogged up, so I cleared it, my eyes welling with tears as my body began to shudder. I need you to be free. To be dancing again, like the first time I saw you. Remember that? Emma's pinky twitched against my hand ever so slightly. I exhaled, taking it as a sign. It might just be one of her muscle twitches. But I was going to take it as her hearing me. You were so carefree and happy that night. The club was being rowdy at a bar making a scene, and you were there dancing away while the brothers were brawling. Fox's graying beard lifted with a sign of happiness. Best damn day of our lives, Kevlar. You walking in that day on the beat was the greatest thing to happen to our Emma. I leaned down to plant a kiss on her forehead. She's the best thing to ever happen to me. She and our kids. Emma gasped, her breathing coming a little faster than normal. The monitor showed her heart rate slowing. My adrenaline surged as I brought Emma's hand to my lips, kissing it. "We're right here, Em. I love you. I will always love you." Fox and Bub shifted forward, placing their hands on her too. Emma's face didn't change, but her breathing slowed. My stomach churned in anxiety as I watched the love of my life fade away before my very eyes. "Em," I whimpered as her mouth opened, and she let out one last breath. The machine gave a lone beep, then the green line went flat on the screen. My eyes overflowed with tears as the nurse quietly turned off the machine, then walked out of the room. Just like that. My head fell to Emma's stomach as I cried. I'm not ashamed to say I'd never felt more lost in my life. I have no fucking clue what my life looked like without Emma. To be perfectly honest, I didn't want a life without her. I let out a sob as a hand splayed out on my back. "We'll get through this, son. You're a part of a wide family, no matter what," Fox stated. But I couldn't find the strength to care at that moment. My wife was gone. She fought like hell for the last year, but nothing prepared me for this moment. The agony I would feel. The idea my two kids would have to live their lives without a mother. Nothing could prepare you for that. With my heart feeling like it had lodged in my throat, I glanced up at Em, my eyes foggy from the salt water spilling over. Fuck. I didn't know what the hell to do. How the fuck to feel. I leaned down, pressing my lips to Emma's. There was nothing. No spark, no life. Nothing but fucking bitterness hit me square in the chest. So I pulled back, wiped my face, then stood to storm for the door. "Kevlar, where are you going?" Fox questioned. I didn't reply.
"Liam, we need to mourn together. What about the kids?"
Bub called out as I rushed out the door. I couldn't. I couldn't fucking do anything right then. With my head fuzzing in and out, I made my way down the hall. I couldn't even tell what was real. Upon entering the waiting area, all my brothers stood, and their eyes fell. Neon was the first to reach me, his hand coming out to grip my shoulder, but I shoved out of his grasp. "Don't fucking touch me." Frenzy stepped up. His calming demeanor didn't seem to be all that effective. "Kevlar, what can we do?" "Prez, I'm taking off. Will you make sure Fox and Bub are okay and get someone to check in on my kids? I can't. Right now, go. Go wherever you need to, Kevlar. Clear your head. We'll be here when you come back. We're your family. Don't you forget that." Emma loved New Orleans. I was meant to take her there again after Lucas was born. We never got around to it. I trailed off. "Then go. We have a chapter there if you need anything from them. I'll let them know you're in town." "Thanks, Prez." Quickly, I spun and started walking out of the hospital, where I had spent the last few months. I hoped I never had to fucking come back again. I should be stronger than this. I should stick around for Fox and Bub. They lost Emma, too. But my wife meant everything to me. It was like I died that day as well. I just didn't know how to fucking move on without her. So I needed to figure that out before I could be the son-in-law and father they all needed me to be. Because I didn't want to fuck shit up. My kids were all I had left of Emma. So I had to make sure I was the right type of man they deserved to have around them. And right then, I didn't know who the hell I was. How could I be the right type of man for them? Hopefully I'd find myself in Nola, and a piece of Emma there too, because I didn't want to let her go. Not yet. Not for anything. Chapter 1. Kevlar. 3 years later. The night air is shining a deep onyx and silver as the full moon glistens over the Mississippi River. It's particularly murky tonight, but hell, it's been 3 years since I was here last, so it might have always looked like this. My stomach churns at the memory of why I was last in New Orleans. It's been a struggle to let him go, not to mention the shit show with my brother Ethan over those last 3 years, especially when it comes to my kids, Lucas and Sadie. I dropped the ball when him died. I left. I came here to Nola to clear my fucked up head, leaving the kids to mourn for their mother without me.
That's not what a good father does. I regret that decision every damn day. Ethan stood in, was the doting uncle and cared for them when I couldn't. Now he's taken it one step too far and won't let the kids stay with me. Says if they come to the club, they're in danger. If I try to take them back, he'll send in child services. What fucking comeback do I have to that? Not much I can do but visit them as often as possible. Most of the time it's daily, and I spend as much time as I can with them to make up for being a fucking asshole when their mother died. They don't tend to remember too much about their mother. They were so fucking young when she passed. Sadie was 3. Lucas just passed his first birthday. So I show them pictures and tell them stories. I want to try to keep her memory alive for them. The good ones, at least. Nothing from the final year of her life. The year from hell. Riding along Canal Street, the Marriott's to my left. Pulling in, the electric neon New Orleans vibe hits me right away. The ceiling of the entrance is lit up in waves of pink. Not my color, but it was Emma's. I know how much she loved this place. Parking my ride, the valet comes over, and I hand him my details. I unhook my duffel bag, making my way inside, even though the thought of leaving my ride with a valet eats at my insides. As I enter the hotel, I marvel at how fucking big this place is. I've been here before, but it still shocks me. Walking over to the front desk, I check in. Neon did his tech shit and got me a room, seeing as they are full for Party Gras, which is some kind of trop rock festival in the French Quarter. I have to admit, trop rock isn't my thing, but I'm glad there's a festival on right now. It will keep me occupied and stop my mind from overthinking. After grabbing my room key, I walk past the lobby and the bar to the giant walk-in pantry. This place is bigger than my bedroom back at the clubhouse. I head straight for the fridge, grab myself a beer and a packet of potato chips, charge it to my room, then head on up. It's been a long fucking day, and I'm wiped. I desperately want to talk to my fucking kids, but I know I can't. I have no goddamn clue what the hell is happening back at the clubhouse. I hope Zero and Neon can deal with the fallout. Opening the door to my executive king room, I stroll in, closing the door behind me with my foot. I take in the stylish room, nodding in appreciation. Neon did good. Throwing my duffel bag on the massive bed, I walk over to the window. The lights of the French Quarter glow from below as the giant width of the mighty Mississippi flows gently to the right. It's an awesome town. No wonder Emma loved it so much here. I just wish I got to experience it more than once with her. We came here with the club one time to see the boys at Nova Defiance. They needed some backup, and Houston was only too happy to help. I've had a close bond with the brothers here ever since. They took Em's death hard. We all did. Everyone fucking loved her. Exhaling, I walk over to the oversized chair, slumping down onto it. Twisting open the beer bottle, I throw the cap onto the television cabinet and take a long sip. This is my life. I have no fucking clue for how long, either. All I know is the Baron set me up. Tillman fucking Squires, oil tycoon, and Houston's wealthiest son of a bitch, an all-around pain in our damn asses. We had the fucker arrested. The club thought we'd gotten the better of him. Then he had one last final-ditch effort at bringing the club down from inside his damn prison cell. The guy just won't roll over. I guess that's what happens when you try to take down the richest man in all of fucking Texas. The Baron's claiming a cop was working with our then-president and Zero's father, Frenzy. When Frenzy was killed by the militia, the Baron worked his way in and made a deal with that same cop, which is utter bullshit. Frenzy would never rat on the club, not when his entire family is a part of it. Bringing the club down when your entire family is involved just doesn't make any fucking sense. With Frenzy dead and out of the way, the Baron said he would take Frenzy's place as the informant and give the cop all the dirt on the club for a lesser sentence. Whoever this cop is, fell for the Baron's bullshit. Because the Baron stole a brick of cocaine, or Snow White as the club refers to it, from us, and he gave it straight to the Heat. Then he proceeded to tell them it was mine. Why me? We have no fucking clue. I'm not aware of the full ins and outs of what the Baron told the cops about my involvement with the cocaine. but I do know it's not good and has pushed me into a corner. An ex-cop dealing drugs? Yeah, that's not going to go down well. So, Zero, my president, gave me a burner, a fake identity, 10 grand, and told me to get the fuck out of Houston until we can deal with Tornado Tillman. I could have gone anywhere my two wheels wanted me to go, but they headed east toward New Orleans, to feel closer to Emma. When shit gets rough, somehow her memory always helps me through. I know I need to let her go, but how the hell do I move on with life if I'm clinging so tightly to her? It's difficult to see sense when you love someone so goddamn much, and they're taken for no fucking good reason. All I know is, I need to find a way to deal with losing him because bottling my emotions isn't doing any good. Especially not in situations like this. Gulping down a long draw of beer, my eyes focus on the Mississippi. The street is alive and buzzing with the typical NOLA madness which descends during the evening and into the night. I want to crawl up on the bed and sleep, but M wouldn't want that for me. She'd want me to get out, take in the vibe of the nightlife, mingle with the New Orleanians in all their fantastical, jazzy, whimsical, yet eccentric ways. She'd want me to go to Pat O'Brien's and drink too much while listening to some awesome music. Spend my morning lining up at Café du Monde to get the best beignets I've ever had in my life. I know damn well M would not want me moping. So I'm not going to. I'm going to try not to worry about the shitstorm back home and enjoy my time here because who knows how long I have. Necking the rest of my beer, I throw the bottle into the trash, then pull my shirt up for a quick sniff. I smell half-human after the long ride, so I grab a jacket and head for the door with no shower. Time to make new memories. Walking out of the hotel, I head for Bourbon Street. Even though I'm trying to keep myself positive, the crap back home swirls through my mind. If the cops come searching for me, who knows what the fuck they're going to do? I need to let the president of NOLA Defiance know I'm in town, just in case I need to call on them for anything. Plus, it would be fucking rude of me to come all this way and not stop by. Pulling out my burner, I dial Grudge's number. He won't know it's me calling, so I expect him to be grumpy on the other end as I continue my walk to Bourbon Street.
"Who the fuck's this?"
Grudge grumbles down the line, his deep voice making me smile. "Grudge, it's Kevlar from Houston. I'm on a burner." He lets out a chuckle.
"Fuck me. It's been a while. On a burner, eh? You deep in shit?"
Tilting my head, I watch as a drag queen walks past me with a pig on a leash. The things you see in New Orleans. Can't even say I'm surprised.
"Yeah, brother. Won't go into details, but I'm laying low. Just thought as a courtesy, I let NOLA know I'm in town. You bring your shit with you?"
Exhaling, I turn onto Bourbon Street, making it a little harder to hear. "Hopefully not."
"Good. Have fun while you're in town, kid. Let loose. But just so you're aware, I've stepped down as president. My damn bones aren't what they used to be. I'm too fucking old."
My eyes widen as I come to a halt. Leaning back against the side wall of one of the numerous pubs, I prop my foot back against the wall. "Who's the new press?"
"Hurricane. He's good. Reminds me of me when I was young. Razor's the new VP. I've stepped into the wise one position."
I can definitely picture that. "Grudge?"
"Yeah, brother?"
"Thanks for everything you did for me and him." He snorts.
"Don't even mention it. She was special."
He pauses, taking a deep breath.
"But you gotta get on with your life, Kevlar. You have to find a way to keep her in your heart, but also find room for someone else."
That thought terrifies me. "Yeah, maybe one day. Will you tell Hurricane I'm here?"
"Yeah, I'll let him know. Expect a call. He'll probably want to come see you."
"Yeah, I might be here a while. Happy to catch up."
"All right. Have a good night on Bourbon Street."
"How did you..." He ends the call before I finish my sentence. I guess the old guy knows the sounds of his hometown well enough to guess where I am. Turning around, I look down Bourbon Street. The long stretch of road is alight with neon colors. The buildings stretch up in their ornate architectural design, giving this whole place an old-worldly vibe.
The street is alive and buzzing with people from all walks of life. Laughter and music fill the air as drunken revelers stand on balconies, throwing beads down to even drunker women below who are flashing their tits freely. The party atmosphere is definitely alive, and somehow it's lifting my mood. A crowd of people circle a kid who must be all of 10 years old as he sits banging on some upturned buckets like they're the best drum kit in town. Thing is, he's holding a tune, and he sounds pretty damn good. Smiling as I keep walking, I pass a life-size Chewbacca, and nobody bats an eyelid. I chuckle to myself as I make my way to Pat O'Brien's. I forgot just how animated this town is, how bright and effervescent these people are. I fucking love this place, even with the tainted memories. As I walk up to Pat O'Brien's, there's a small wait, so I line up, pulling my cell back out to make sure there's nothing from Zero. Just as I thought. Nothing. Zero told me not to contact him, and I need to adhere to that. They have this number, so they'll call when they know the way forward. So for now, I need to bide my time. Half an hour later, I'm walking inside the famous bar. It's much the same as when I was here last with them, and she drank so many hurricane cocktails that we got fucking wasted. Fox had to call an Uber to take us back to the NOLA clubhouse. Those were the days when you could celebrate without fear of shit raining down on us, without fear of death and damn chaos. I chuckle fondly at the memory, walking up to the bar. My instinct is to order a beer, but I want to celebrate him, so I get a drink for her and order a fucking huge-ass hurricane. It might be a bitch drink, but a couple of these will knock me on my ass quicker than I can say gumbo. Grabbing the tall glass with the world-renowned cherry red liquid, I walk outside, the oversized fountain changing colors in the darkened night. People laugh, drink, and generally be merry as the music plays loudly. I make my way to a table at the very back of the patio. Sitting on the metal chair, it scrapes along the pavers as I pull it in. I place my hurricane on the glass-topped table and sit back, people watching. The other three chairs at my table are empty as I sit under a green umbrella, near the giant palm fronds out of sight of most people. Just the way I like it. Being incognito is the right move for me at this point in time. I must keep a low profile. Tossing the straw, I bring the drink to my lips and take a sip. The hit of alcohol invades my senses, like a brick hitting a wall. It's no wonder Em and I got so fucking wasted last time we were here. My eyes shift around the patio, observing all the people flirting, drinking, happy as fucking Larry. I sit back. A fugitive from the law, desolate from my kids, a fucking widower, wishing I could be back in Houston dealing with this shit. Suddenly a chair pulls out to my right, and a guy slumps down wearing sunglasses and a baseball cap at 9:30 at night.
You don't mind, do you? You're here all on your own, and honestly, I need a place kind of out of the way. This is the only seat in the area that's, well, hidden.
I assess him. Black tee. Leather jacket, that scruffy brown hair women love, a bit of light stubble. He appears to be a fucking rebel to me.
Look, man, I don't want any trouble. I'm trying to lay low myself.
He smiles, all toothy and wide.
You in trouble with the law, big man?
I furrow my brows. That's none of your fucking business. You're the douche coming to me searching for a hiding place. The ass slumps back in his seat, getting comfortable.
I ditched my security team. I need a moment away from it all.
From what? I scrunch up my face.
You don't know who I am, do you?
I don't give a flying fuck who you are.
I like you, even if you are drinking a bitch drink.
He cocks his head to the side. I'm drinking this to honor someone, so fuck off.
It's still a bitch drink, whether you're honoring someone or not.
A slow smile crosses my face.
Yeah, it is.
So who the fuck are you? He rolls his shoulders, then takes a sip of his beer.
That's a loaded question.
I shrug.
I have all night.
He turns to me.
To everyone in here, I'm Rush Daly, music's latest it guy, a fucking mega superstar. To me, I'm just a guy from Detroit who wants to relax a little.
So you're famous then? He exhales, his body slumping further.
Yeah. I wish sometimes I wasn't, though. Don't get me wrong. I love my fans and the biz. I just wish I could come out on a night like tonight and drink a beer in fucking peace.
I grip his shoulder. Well, brother, I'm not going to say anything to draw attention to you. So let's have a fucking beer. Rush's boyish grin lights his face, turning his back to everyone in the patio.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that.
I lift my glass. He lifts his beer and we clink them together in cheers. I take a large mouthful, the alcohol running through my veins, warming me from the inside out. My goal was to have a good time while in Nola to celebrate him and enjoy her memory. What better way to do that than to party with the rock star?
Chapter 2. Jovi. Do you honestly believe spending the night partying on Bourbon Street is a good idea? Savannah rolls her eyes as she applies her lipstick. Babe, we're 8 hours away from San Antonio, and what happened to you with the lone wolf? She smiles. 8 hours! That's a lot of mileage between them and us, don't you think? I slump on the bed in our hotel room, letting out a long sigh. I don't know. I'm just worried that with the time we've taken to travel, he'll be right behind us. Savannah presses her lips together, then smacks them with a pop. Look, if they are right behind us, they're inevitably going to catch up to us anyway, right? My eyes widen in shock. That doesn't help me, Sav. My point is, if they're going to catch us, we may as well go out having a night of fun. Groaning, I flop back on the bed in a huff. Staring up at the ceiling, I shake my head. You're not taking this seriously. Savannah moves in over the top of me, staring right into my eyes. Babe, you're not taking this seriously. We're two hot-as-sin women out in the big wide world on our own for the first time. We have no limitations. No one, like my father, holding me back. No one holding you back trying to tell us what we can and can't do. Aren't you excited by that? She leans down, pressing her bright red lips to my forehead, then disappears from my view. The white ceiling is all I can see as I stare at it, contemplating what she's said. You know I'm right. She is. That's the problem. Grumbling under my breath, I sit up. Fine. One night. That's all. One night in New Orleans, then we keep driving. Savannah rolls her shoulders with the brightest smirk on her face. Fine by me as long as you put on that sexy black dress I bought you. Huffing, I stand from the bed, then walk over to my suitcase. You win. We go out. We look hot. We drink and have fun. But tomorrow... Yeah, Miss Sirius. I hear you. Yanking my suitcase up onto the bed, I zip it open, pulling out my little black dress. It's like a corset around the bust and waist, then flows out to a see-through lace skirt, only covering just enough to hide my black lace panties. The dress is sexiness personified. I'm no stranger to revealing clothing, but this is something else. Savannah is desperate for me to wear it, and what better place for me to wear something like this than on Bourbon Street, where anything goes? Grabbing my black leather jacket, I put on my ensemble, then walk to the bathroom to deal with my blonde hair and makeup. Savannah stands next to me admiring herself. Her short, wavy, dark brown hair is styled perfectly to suit her look. The tight, form-fitting, bright yellow short dress glows against her olive skin, and is exactly her. Her breasts are pushed up to maximum capacity. She's a real stunner. Everything her father would be so utterly ashamed about. He's the whole reason Savannah is here in this mess with me. Honestly, I'm not sure if I could be doing this without her. You're thinking too much. You need to stop dwelling and enjoy tonight. We're freaking banging. Bourbon Street won't know what's hit it, Savannah chimes. I let out a small giggle, wrapping my arm around her short stature. You're right. I'm going to unwind tonight. Let my hair down and just enjoy everything. I mean, I've always wanted to get out of San Antonio. Now I have, and I'm not embracing it. I'm in fucking Nolens. Yeah, you are. Savannah wraps her other arm around my waist, pulling me into an embrace, and we're going to have the best night. Okay, let's go to that bar and have a tornado. Savannah bursts out laughing. Oh my God, you're adorable. It's called a hurricane, and girl, it's going to blow your damn mind. She grabs my hand, pulling me toward the door. I struggle to keep up with her frantic pace in my heels, but
Sample complete. Ready to continue?